talk agreement, the one in September, was difficult for you to accept, I think, in some ways. You were subject to a lot of criticism when you came back to San Salvador. And the question was, how were you able to keep your party together at that time?
I'm going to go a little bit beyond the specific question of September, because everybody seems to think that I had a leash and had to tame the party. This was not so.
No.
I think a lot of people do not, I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't believe now. I'm glad that Bernie Aronson believes it now. That Major Dawison, everybody thought was a real hardliner and the head of the party. Well, he was the head of the party. Was against the peace process and against the negotiation. And
yep.
They're totally incorrect. The guy was all for it. I know it's hard for people to believe that that's true, but that's exactly true. And I never had any problem with the party. I'm sure there are people who vote for Arena or say they, if you ask them what party you belong to, they will say Arena. And I've had a group of women that called me a traitor for negotiating. But the party itself as an institution, as a whole, with Dawison being for the peace process, there was no way I had any problems with the party. He would take care of all the problems. I never really had much of a worry with, you know, trying to the party. I always kept the party very involved and informed. One of the techniques that we used was, for instance, in the judicial issue, I had people from the Supreme Court and from the lawyers and associations. And, you know, these are what's at stake here. Why don't you give me recommendations? We had 7 groups within the armed forces. Each group had one member, one being a sub-lieutenant, a lieutenant, a major, lieutenant colonel, whatever, discussing each of the issues that had to do with the 7 issues of the armed forces chapter. And, you know, what are your recommendations? And I would try to get everybody sort of, you know, give me your ideas on this. And I would go back to, you know, your idea was a good one, it was accepted, this one wasn't, we had to change it. And I never felt that, you know, we had problems with people here. I think people imagine more of a problem than what really was there.
And in that connection, did you have the sense that some people in your military had direct contact with some people in Washington on the military side or in the CIA?
They had, probably. I mean, in those days, every barrack here had quite a few U.S. Army people.
Right. But you didn't have difficulty in bringing in, maintaining unity, so to speak.
Not within the party.
Not within the party.
Obviously, it was a lot more difficult with the armed forces.
Yeah.
Because the armed forces, although there is a leadership, that leadership is always questioned because it's handpicked by the president. It's not, you know, it's not sort of elected by them. I'm talking about the minister and the vice minister and the 2 chiefs of staff. But it's, I had, after every meeting between the FMLN and our negotiating team, I had a meeting with all the commanders, reunión de comandantes. And this is what happened, this is why, this is how this went, what do you think? I would get their feedback. I'm sure there are some of them never agreed with what we were doing, but they were, as all Army officers should be obedient to their hierarchy.
That's very interesting, because again, that's quite different from the impression that existed in New York City.
Maybe we gave the wrong impression.
Or maybe it was helpful negotiating tactic. I don't
know. That certainly was. That had to do with trying to influence in accepting something. It was in the constitutional reform agreement, and it had to do with Article 248, which deals with how the Constitution can be reformed. And after I explained why I could not accept what the FMLN was proposing, there was no more cult. And everybody thinks that the U.S. sort of, you know, put the agenda forward, accept this, accept this, accept that. That was totally wrong, very wrong impression. I'm not sure whether that was more of a local impression than outside, but locally here, everybody thought that the U.S. was sort of forcing the government to accept what they felt should be acceptable. And that's we never had any pressure from the U.S., anybody in the U.S. government. U.S. government, not Congress.
That's interesting, because in the UN, again, the impression was rather the opposite, namely that the U.S. government was under some pressure from your government to press the Secretary General to take over and to...
Well, not really take over, but I think we agreed with the U.S. government that Álvaro de Soto is sometimes a problem and not a solution. And that in some instances, the presence, direct presence of the Secretary General could have been helpful. But
you may recall that there was, in this period that you're talking about, there was an article that appeared in the New York Times, which was extremely critical of De Soto and of the way the UN was handling the negotiations. And at that point, Baker called the Secretary General and said he wanted the Secretary General to know that that article did not reflect his views, his Baker's views, but it clearly came from Aronson. I mean, Baker didn't say that, but it clearly did come from Aronson.
Soviet Union to listen to the OAS. The U.S., they're in the OAS, but not the Soviet Union. So they said, well, no, we have to get the Soviet Union, especially after we see that President Bush and Gorbachev have been pushing for an end of the thing. And that's why we opted for the U.N. Secretary General rather than the OAS.
And the UN Secretary General was fairly determined that this should be a UN operation, because the experience in Nicaragua had not been entirely happy there. The cooperation was difficult between the two organizations. So that one of the conditions that was established by the Secretary General was that UNSAR, for example, should be purely a UN operation. And that was in line with your thinking. I'm giving a lecture to you. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I really can't tell you how valuable this is. I want to take your picture, if I can.